Even if the roots of technoculture may lie somewhere else, like in Chicago and Detroit, Berlin had this specific or special historical situation that made it possible that something very unique could develop here.
Hey, streamers and dreamers, my name is Juba, and this is my first ever episode as a host. And you're listening to The Week by Telecom Electronic Beats. It's Thursday, March the 21st, and this is your weekly update on music, culture, and what's next. So, this week, we're talking Berlin technoculture, boycotts at South by Southwest, a new nightclub in Amsterdam, and more. Berlin technoculture has been named Intangible Cultural Heritage. UNESCO is the United Nations Educational, Scientific and Cultural Organization, and they just added Berlin technoculture to their list of intangible cultural heritage. That refers to different forms of cultural expression linked to creativity and tradition that should be recognized and preserved. There were other additions to this year's list out of Germany, like Bavarian Winter Parade, where people dress up in monster costumes, and a specific sewing style from Hessen. But the presence of Berlin technoculture was a surprise, even if the application process has been underway for years. The UNESCO designation has symbolic and legal benefits, so Berlin is actually not the first place to recognise a scene or a genre as a cultural heritage. Merengue is listed for the Dominican Republic, as is reggae in Jamaica. But the idea to submit Berlin technoculture to the list came from mathematician and musicologist Hans Kusto in 2011, and Dr. Motta of Love Parade and Rave the Planet handed in the official application in November 2022. That's a long process, so there's a reason to celebrate, but also we did have some questions. To find out more, we wanted to chat to someone with first-hand knowledge of the process. That's Ellen Dosh-Roering. Ellen is responsible for public relations at Rave the Planet and co-wrote the UNESCO application. So hi, Ellen. How are you?
Hi. First of all, thanks for having me. I'm super excited.
Thanks for coming on. Really appreciate it. And it's going to be a very interesting conversation, I believe, about, I guess, what Berlin is known for, but also what this means for Berlin and just the idea of, like, what it means to have something kind of intangible, like rave culture or, like, techno culture, you know, according to UNESCO. So, I don't know, if you want to get into it, just tell us about, like, the idea, the application, where it began and why it was so important for, you know, this to happen.
Well, the idea appeared in 2011. We started an association in the Kunsthaus Tacheles. Some of the people will probably remember. It was a big art house here in Berlin Mitte. And the founding of the association happened there. And there were many people from the cultural scene invited. So Hans Kusto, who is a Swiss mathematician, who also wrote several books. And he just, when we were in the process of reading our statutories, he was like dropping the idea, hey, why not trying to get Berlin technoculture protected by the UNESCO? And everybody's there, it was around 50 people. They were so exciting and so celebrating this idea from that very moment that we said, okay, amazing, we put this in our statutories. And yeah, after a while, when also it was almost similar or at the same time when the Arthouse Tacheles was closed because of gentrification, we also had to close our association, but for other reasons. And the idea just grew in our heads, in our hearts for over the years. And when we started back in, or had the first idea to start with a new nonprofit organization, Rave the Planet, that was back in 2018, this idea was still present. And we submitted the application in 2022. And then after a while, we got a letter from the Senate of Berlin, and they said that they actually don't like what we do. That was really
interesting.
Weird. Yeah, really interesting. We were like totally shocked. How could someone not like what we do? Because we're trying to protect what they also like to protect.
Yeah.
Yeah, anyway, but there was this letter from them, and then we were all really sad about it, but we said, okay, but let's try it anyway. Yeah, and surprisingly, after a while, we got the official letter from the Kulturministerkonferenz and the German UNESCO Commission that they actually think it's really good what we do, but they still had some questions because there were some points that were not really clear, some requests also on the participation of the scene. And so we had to revise it, had to write I think it was about 20 new fresh sites, and to put it all together in a very small application form, because you have just a limited number of letters to write in there. And we did a lot of work again, and there was only less than 2 months to do that. And then we submitted this again with a big list of supporters from the Berlin scene. Yeah, and then we had to wait.
And now here we are. It happened.
And now
congrats.
Here we are.
After all the hard work. I find it interesting because I've come from the UK, so like I'm an outsider looking in, and I've also come from a city. I mean, most cities these days in Europe or like the West or whatever are like fighting gentrification. It's such a current, like almost like ubiquitous like concept that we're all dealing with. And for me, it's very interesting how gentrification affects like places like London, where like a lot of clubs shut down, people don't go out as much because obviously venues and spaces change with gentrification. And kind of seeing the approach to it in someone like Berlin, where it still is a thing, like clubs are still being shut down, but it's always felt like there's been a bit more of a concerted effort to protect the spaces. And I find that interesting. And like, what is it about Berlin that makes people want to protect these spaces so much more?
It's not only about the spaces or the cultural sites itself, it's about the intangible culture. So all that grows here, all the performance art that develop, the design and stuff like that. And what makes it so special is that Berlin has a special situation, which is historical because of the fall of the Berlin Wall and the entire development of the culture here. For example, since 1949, we have no curfew in Berlin. In most of the other cities and areas in the world, you have curfews and stuff. And so there was completely, even if the roots of techno culture may lie somewhere else, like in Chicago and Detroit, Berlin had this specific or special historical situation that made it possible that something very unique could develop here. And so this is it, what we actually want to protect with this. So, for example, the inner city spaces. After the fall of the Berlin Wall, there were all these empty buildings, industry buildings and stuff. And what happened was that the scene got in that buildings and they just used it for their cultural expressions, for their events. And so the buildings, this industrial and also sometimes protected old buildings, these are part of this culture as well. So you can actually not say, imagine there would be a threat on Berghain and they had to move. It's impossible to move Berghain because it's not only what happens in the club, it's also the club, the entire building itself, because of the architectural structure. This is important for the entire experience of this specific culture. And so the inner city spaces are very important and this needs to be protected. And we just lay a foundation with this recognition. And from now on, it's even more work to start projects and talk with the politicians and staff. And
I have a few questions. I mean, I guess to get to some semantics, like how would you define techno culture in Berlin, first of all, to sort of, make something intangible a bit more concrete? And to me, why was it techno culture that was protected, not just like Berlin club culture? So I think also sometimes Berlin is just designated as this techno city, and that is such a big part of Berlin, but actually also, you know, places change and they develop, and like Berlin is definitely still very much associated with techno, but there's also other scenes and other like potentially vulnerable scenes that may well need protecting when venues are being shut down anyway, which don't only affect techno clubs.
I think the easiest explanation is that we are from techno culture, and I think the most known club culture part of Berlin is the techno club culture. And since we can only do this in the field which is authentic for us, we of course protected the or asked for the techno culture. Look, we are not hip hop people. But if hip-hop people think that it could be possible or necessary to protect this culture as well, they can do it. But you have to write a very specific application. They request a lot of stuff like what is the culture about, what influence has it, how is the Europe-wide connection and stuff like this. So they are very specific with what you can protect with the UNESCO list and whatnot.
I think that's a fair point, like the idea that like, as much as there are other scenes, you can only speak for what you know.
Yes,
and
of
it'll probably be disingenuous for you to be like, yeah, let's protect club culture.
I couldn't speak for the English culture, for example, because I'm not in England.
And the
same is for Detroit. Detroit is absolutely recognizable for the UNESCO. Absolutely. But there have to be people from Detroit who write the application.
But what is Berlin techno culture to you, or according to the application?
According to the application, well, yeah. I have an entire DIN A4 page which I could read to you. It's so much. So mainly, you ask for me or for Ray of the Planet or the application?
I guess based upon your application that yeah. you put in, like how would you summarize or... Yeah, qualify what yeah. Berlin Technikculture is, because I guess you had to do that for the application.
Yeah, of course we had. First of all, it's as I said, it's very specific what happened here due to the historical backgrounds, what happened already in the 80s. So Berlin, for example, you can see Berlin was in the GDR, kind of an island, West Berlin. And there were some specific things which made it attractive to people. For example, there was no compulsory military service when you lived in West Berlin. So many creatives from all over Western Germany moved to Berlin because they didn't want to go to the military. Mm-hmm. So that was very attractive. The next thing was that Berlin was very cheap, which is also nice for creative yeah. people because yeah. they don't have to work for I don't know any other company and lose their power to do the creative yeah. stuff. So they came here and they could afford the super cheap places. And there was another thing, it was called Berlinzulage. Mm. And that was it was 300 D-Mark, yeah. Deutschmarks, yeah. which got the people living here to stay here. This made this place especially attractive. Mm-hmm. So these few things and probably many more, like the lack of the curfew and so that made this place so special. And from this soil, there was a super creative scene flourishing already before Acid House arrived to Berlin in 1988. When this came to Berlin, that was a complete game changer because this was a new kind of music. And Berlin, as I said, in this very special situation, they took this opportunity. The musicians were inspired and they had the opportunity to live their inspiration, to create, because they had the time and it was just the right time and the right place. Yeah,
you're definitely an encyclopedia of Berlin techno. I know you know your stuff. You can I can tell you guys know your stuff, and it makes sense because obviously you had to put in this yeah. very detailed application. And I'm interested in the then and now, because like I spend a lot of time on Instagram, as most people do, and like every like Berlin meme page is literally just sort of like about four generalizations of like the techno, like Berghain, Trezor, all that kind of energy. It's like, this is what Berlin is known for. And obviously techno is what Berlin is known for. But I wonder if the image of what Berlin techno is like, is actually kind of like what it looks like now. Because you have all these different events and parties like Malahunta, which is like a bit more of a colourful, different kind of form of techno party, which is also influenced by a lot of Latin roots as well. And just like, places like Berghain are opening their programming to different artists who do engage in that spectrum, but they're also not necessarily the traditional, what we'd sort of see as maybe this industrial dark burning techno. So I'm interested in terms of like this application, how much does it represent like the direction that Berlin techno is going in, do you reckon? Does it matter?
It matters a lot, yeah, because what happened here and still happens is that we have a transnational, multicultural techno culture developed here. There are so many diverse ways of creating. There is, for example, you have Jewish techno parties, special Jewish techno parties, and also you have the Berghain techno, but you also have the Holzmarkt, which was a former Bar 25, which was a completely different style. So there are so many different kinds, but this variety of different styles, decorations, international people and all that, that all together makes the special techno culture in Berlin.
I love that. It sounds like a pitch. Like, this is the special Berlin techno. I like that.
I'm always pitching. That's why I'm here. Now the pitch is done. Now I'm just explaining.
Berlin Tourism Board. And I guess, in some ways, going on from that, obviously, like, Berlin techno has received this designation. It's like a, you know, it's the sound of, like, Berlin is seen as techno. But I guess you've mentioned places like Detroit, you know, Chicago, and I think there's always been a conversation around how, like, Berlin techno, whether it whitewashed techno or whether it kind of, like, ran with techno and, like, I won't say co-opted, because ultimately a lot of those artists also came to Berlin and added to the sound here. But just this idea of, like, you know, I guess almost, like, addressing this weird, like, dichotomy or maybe imbalance in, like, UNESCO aside, just... recognition. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. So the recognition, we mentioned this a lot also here in our application form. Of course, you have to describe the entire historical process, how this specific culture developed, and also the musical side, not only the intangible, what happens in the clubs or in the venues stuff, also the musical side. And of course, you can never, ever tell the story about Berlin techno culture without mentioning Detroit, without mentioning Chicago. But you can also not mention or write the story of Detroit without mentioning Kraftwerk. And so I think we have to rethink if it is really necessary to build this borders between the cities. It's more necessary to connect, to get together, and to think how we can put this on the next level. So the recognition of Berlin techno culture is just the first step for us. We now want to support other cities and countries to do it for themselves as well. So we are always there to doing and consulting. We will be supportive if we can do anything with research or just give our research results to the other cities. But as I mentioned before, the most important thing is that these cultural creators of these specific locations have to do it themselves. We cannot come from Berlin and tell the UNESCO in America, for example, hey, please do this for Detroit. No, the Detroit people have to do it themselves.
But I think what you're saying, the idea that like, okay, this has happened here, but there's also a space to like share and express that symbiotic relationship between like Detroit and Chicago and Berlin. So it's not necessarily about ignoring or say creating borders, like they started it and then that's their story and this is our story now. It's like they can't exist without each other.
It's just a chapter of the entire story of technoculture worldwide.
Yeah.
So we just finished this little chapter, but there are many other chapters that have to be put in this special book.
No, I get it. And I think there's just been a constant history of like maybe not expressing or telling the stories of all the chapters equally. But I guess thanks to conversations that are happening, like we can rewrite or address the maybe some of the mistakes of the past and like move forward being like, we're going to make more of an effort to share these like whole histories as opposed to like part histories, you know? But you know what's funny? Because obviously like Berlin techno culture is seen as this underground movement, but at the same time, is it really underground anymore? Because like there's big money in techno, there's big money in the clubs, right? But the idea of like techno being associated with or protected by the UNESCO, like, do you feel like there's ever a chance of some kind of like, I don't know, sellout energy? Do you know what I mean? Like, or is that kind of an old-fashioned thing? People need to just acknowledge the reality that in this day and age, techno is big business and it's not.
It's not only big business. Look, you still have very, very, very underground stuff. I know so many places, also illegal places in Berlin right now where happens a lot of underground. So, of course, you have these big clubs like Berghain, like Tresor and so on, which are well known in the entire world. But there is still so much going on in between, these little pearls and gems that you can find anywhere in the city. So if somebody asks me, as a person, where to go in Berlin, I always say, go to a bar that looks nice, where you can hear the sound you like, and then just go with the flow. You don't need to go to the big clubs. Just go with the flow, and you will find a place where you will probably discover something you would have not expected.
Do you think it makes it less cool?
Less cool?
Yeah.
Why should it?
Because it's just like UNESCO, like, you might as well get a Nobel Peace Prize. Do you know?
Like, but imagine if you would get a Nobel Peace Prize.
And then
what's not cool at this?
All the like the Berlin techno, all the DJs and techno producers in their black going up to like, you know, to get this reward from the UNESCO or from the Nobel Peace Prize. But I'm just joking. Like, I don't think it's uncool, but I just guess it's sort of where techno started and like the roots in Berlin. This idea that in 50 years later, it'll be like UNESCO protected. It kind of sounds like, I don't know.
Put it in a museum or something.
Yeah.
The thing with the intangible cultural heritage is that they are honoring and recognizing a vibrant, living cultural form. And it's necessary to protect this. It's not like we put this now in a museum or in a historical textbook or whatsoever. No, it is way more. It is about keeping this alive and protecting it from influences like commercialization. I think one of the problems of the commercialization we have now in Berlin is more the inflation. So clubs and event organizers, promoters, they are forced to go maybe more commercial ways that they Brand actually stuff. Would like because of the economic pressure from the outside.
Do you think this is actually going to make a positive difference to Berlin Techno? Do you think it's actually going to protect it from things like gentrification?
Not automatically. So this is just a recognition that says, okay, we're now to be seen on an eye level with other cultural forms in Berlin, which get, for example, lots of funding and stuff, yeah. But it's not only about the funding, it's about the recognition also in the wide audience, in the public, you know. Because when the UNESCO says that this is a culture worthy of protection, that gives us a different standing. And with this different standing, we have now a chance to talk differently to the authorities, politicians and so. There is now a lot of work and a lot of tasks we got from the UNESCO to move on to protect this, and we have to develop our own projects for this and also make the entire history from the intangible heritage tangible to the people. Like, for example, we could build up an archive with especially a Berlin techno books and stuff like this, but openly to the people that they can join and experience this, open spaces for such stuff.
So I wonder as well, like, because you often, I mean, I came once upon a time to Berlin as like a tourist. I went to Berghain. Why did I stay?
Yeah.
As in, why did I stay in Berlin? Well, I came first as like a tourist just because I was like, I'd never been to Berlin before. And then I'm a very big cliche. I wanted to DJ, you know what I mean? I wanted to move out of my parents' house. London's expensive. I moved to Berlin. Like, it's kind of like probably the story that most people tell. Like, sometimes I'm at parties and you have the same question, like, why are you here? And I remember one time I was talking to a guy and I was like, I just can't bother to answer that question anymore. It's just, I'm bored of it. Like, I don't want to, we all know why we're here. But, you know,
Important points, you know?
You and Motta did not do this alone. So, I don't know, tell us about the collective work, because obviously, I guess something that stood out to me is this idea of like it being a collective work, or like you not doing it alone, or, you know, other scenes. And just, I guess it's been a long, hard road to an extent. And it's about like the overall impact on the city, on the scene, which is not just one person. So I'm actually interested about the collaborative work, like who else was behind it?
The work was very long. We started in 2011. As I said, the idea came from Hans Cousteau. Then we had networking meetings with several club culture creators, DJs, club organizers and stuff like this. And then we asked many of them for recommendation letters for the UNESCO application. There were also people from the UDK, the University, also Universität der Künste, who wrote a recommendation letter. And so, yeah, and there were so many people involved. I have a list here in front of me with artists, with clubs and event organizers, labels and artist agencies, cultural creators, which are just symbolic, because we, as Rave the Planet nonprofit organization, we only wrote the application, but the actual cultural work did many, many, many hundreds and thousands of other people in the city. And yeah, that's a huge thank you to everyone who supported us. Like, for example, there are two people which I have to mention especially. There was Yad Atta and Felicitas Setili, which did the most of the research work in the beginning and for the first version of the application.
Okay, cool.
And that had to be revisited then, but anyway, without their important work, it wouldn't have been possible. So honor goes also to them.
Props to you guys. Thank you so much. Props to you guys. And if I ever need a funding application, then I'll reach out to you, because, you know, it'd be helpful in it, especially in German. Sometimes these applications are hard.
They are.
They are very hard.
Really?
Yeah. All right, sick. Well, that was great. And thank you for coming on. And I feel like you've given a very expansive history and sort of background. And I think people will be interested to understand why Berlin, why the techno scene, what next, what does it mean? And maybe like London, they should like, you know, try and get like Funky House recognized, or I don't know.
Yeah, sure, why not?
South Africa should try and get Amapiano and Gom recognized, and Afro House. Why not?
Yeah.
Just all scenes around the world.
Yeah, all around the world.
All right, so let's get into some more news that mattered this week. Vinyl record sales affect UK inflation statistics. Interesting. So for the first time since 1992, vinyl records have been added to the list of goods and services that are used to measure inflation in the UK. There are 700 items on the list, which are meant to reflect a range of consumer spending and to calculate price changes over time. Things are added or removed based on different factors, but tech and cultural trends are taken into account. And that's why vinyl is on the list. The British phonographic industry said that more than 6 million vinyl records were sold in the UK in 2023, which is the most since 1990. It's a little wild to think that record sales can have an impact on inflation stats and an entire national economy. But then again, apparently so have air fryers, gluten-free bread and sunflower seeds, which have also been added to the list as well. Performers and speakers pulled out of South by Southwest over US Army sponsorship. The South by Southwest Music Festival and Conference just wrapped up last weekend after 10 days of busy schedules and even busier events. It's one of the largest music festivals of its kind, but this year a number of performers and speakers pulled out to protest the US Army's involvement as one of the festival's biggest sponsors amidst the ongoing war in Gaza. The Austin for Palestine Coalition highlighted the Army's sponsorship alongside that of defense companies like Collins Aerospace and RTX, saying that these organizations contribute to violence around the world, undermining the festival's reputation as a celebration of creativity and innovation. South by Southwest stood by this decision, even after acts cancelled in protest. On Twitter, they said, "The defense industry has historically been a proving ground for many of the systems we rely on today. These institutions are often leaders in emerging technologies, and we believe it's better to understand how their approach will impact our lives." Even the governor of Texas entered the fray, tweeting out that, and I quote, "We are proud of the US military in Texas. If you don't like it, don't come here." Not the best promo for the Texas Tourism Board. A new venue called Tillertech takes over their school's former building in Amsterdam. The school was a famous Amsterdam nightclub that shut down at the beginning of 2024, but a new venue called Tillertech is already set to take over the building in April. They have a completely new team and are just planning renovations and programming, but raves won't be the only thing happening there. Tillertech is in charge of the whole building and they say they're already inviting other businesses, including a queer gym, a queer tattoo parlour and a coffee roaster to rent space in the complex. They definitely have big shoes to fill, but it sounds like there's definitely no shortage of ideas for now. And I'm personally very curious to see what comes up next. Okay, that's all for the week this week. Thank you for locking in and thanks for joining my first ever show hosting. And we'll be back next Thursday. Take care and remember to stop scrolling. The Week is a production by Telecom Electronic Beats and ACB Stories.